Welcome to Integral Ascension, your center for self and spiritual inquiry. Learn how to go inward so you can be in alignment with your path and purpose and contribute towards a better future. Integral Ascension, go in to go up. Welcome to an exploration of meditation, a part of the Foundations for Self-Reflection series from Integral Ascension. In this section, we're going to talk about many different types of meditations, approaches to meditation, the effect meditation has on the brain, and we'll also walk through a practice together. We meditate to facilitate mindfulness, to become aware of what we are thinking and how it affects others, a practice called mindfulness. Mindfulness meditation is an opportunity to bear witness to thoughts, actions, recognize patterns and illusions, and also ascend them. This inherently reduces stress, fear, anger, as we begin to recognize our learned and reactive behaviors. In addition to improving our sense of mindfulness, we also meditate to stay in the flow of life. Thoughts and desires we don't like, we think are hard or impossible, get buried away in our subconscious. With meditation, these come through to the conscious level so you can address them and change your old programming. The term Dharma briefly refers to your duty towards yourself. We'll talk about this in the process of individuation in our exploration of the psyche. Ultimately, our quest for understanding comes from a place of the intellect, but is answered from the human capacity of being. And because our experience as humans is often paradoxical, we find that when we come up with one answer, it's immediately negated by our brain. In meditation, we move around this process by rising above the binary and dual approaches to understanding. I want to talk briefly about the Buddhist concept of dependent co-arising in reference to the phrase, "Thou art that," which means everything you think, you are. What you think and what you perceive is undivided. And this is really just drawing to the concept of unity, that there is connection among all of us, and that our internal processes are also connected to the external world. Dependent co-arising comes up with the idea that we are all collectively dreaming up this field, and that field simultaneously is collectively dreaming us up. And that reminds us that to look after oneself is to look after the both of us. Now, before we get into some specific types of meditation, I want to clarify, meditation is not therapy. It's a lifelong journey of discovery. Sometimes in your process of meditation, you'll be faced with buried thoughts and emotions that can be painful. Meditation can be very healing, but it might not be the full support you are seeking, especially as you begin to face years of repressed emotions and traumas. Just be aware in your practice, mindfulness is more about making what's unconscious conscious in our life. You don't necessarily need to change yourself, but more so just become aware and to practice non-attachment so you don't get caught up in the drama and the stories that you create around your experiences. Now, that certainly doesn't mean to avoid or repress them, but again, just to increase your awareness. So if you find yourself caught up in the arising of this experience, please know that there is support for you and that there is more to meditation than this. Don't let it become a discouraging factor that leads you away from the practice of meditation, which is a lifelong journey. I also want to acknowledge that this is a brief outline of these types of meditations, and most of the practices that I'll be referencing come from an entire holistic concept and approach to a way of being. As we examine these processes, it's going to look a little bit like we're taking parts of a system and chopping them up and just using the pieces we like. And I just want to take a moment and acknowledge these practices come from a much richer and deeper outlook that involves the entire life process. For the purposes of getting a general idea of what's out there to work with, we're just going to look at a few pieces from some of these systems. Let's get started by loosely talking about what happens in the brain, what exactly you're doing in the process of meditation, and why that helps to reduce stress and anxiety. Let's start with the lateral prefrontal cortex. This is a region of the brain that is involved in rational, logical thinking. It also is involved in modulating emotional responses. Most often, emotional responses are born in what we call the fear center of the brain. Next, we'll talk about the medial prefrontal cortex, which you'll see often is referred to as the me center of the brain. This is the part that references back to you. It's the part of the brain that processes information related to you. This can be everything from daydreaming to reflection to social interactions. And it's composed of two major parts. So these two parts are composed of the ventral medial prefrontal cortex and the dorsal medial prefrontal cortex. The ventral medial prefrontal cortex processes information related to and similar to you. This is the part of the brain that leads you to take things personally, increases worry and anxiety. I heard a story recently that I loved. Say you have a friend come over to your house and you offer them a glass of water and they say, no, thank you, I'm not thirsty, or I just had some water. In a situation like that, you normally don't take it too personally. But often in life, when you're attached to how you believe the external world views you and your ego is the driving force that's examining how things are related to you, you can take a really similar situation in which you're offering something of yourself to the world, and maybe at the moment, the person you're interacting with might refuse it or say, I don't need it at this time, and your ego can get caught up in that. This is an example of when you take things personally. Okay, and the dorsal medial prefrontal cortex is the part of the brain that evaluates things as dissimilar to you. So this is a function that maintains social connections and is also heavily involved in understanding others. And of course, that also means empathy. Emotional responses that are born in the fear center of the brain, or the amygdala, which is basically an alarm system, often referred to as the fear center. And so what happens is our emotional responses are born in the fear center of the brain and then move to the me center of the brain. And this is how we get stuck in repeated loops and thinking about mistakes we've made, dwelling on thoughts, and dwelling on how others see us. So what we're doing in the process of meditation is altering the neural pathways that naturally, out of instinct and basic survival mode, go from the amygdala, the alarm system, or the fear center of our body, to the me center of the brain, the medial prefrontal cortex. And instead, moving those emotional responses to the lateral prefrontal cortex, the part where we modulate our emotions, and that's involved in rational thinking. So when we do this, when we practice daily to change these neural pathways, what we're basically doing is retraining the brain to respond with a different part of the brain that will take relevant information and discard what's not relevant. And altering these connections essentially decreases overthinking, worrying, reduces the automatic connection that something is wrong, or what's more, that you are the problem. And it breaks the connection with unhelpful parts so that we can see things as they really are without the added stories that our fear center are adding to our experience. And again, the reason that people recommend that you practice daily is because we are retraining neural pathways. And why most people recommend that you practice daily is to ensure the neural pathways that you have formed stay strong. This is just like stretching or exercising in that way, in that to maintain the healthy balance that you've worked to recreate, it's best to practice daily, or at least close to daily. So let's get into a few different types of meditation. I'm going to divide these up into sections, and we'll start with some basic practices that I recommend if you are forming a foundation for daily meditation practice. Then we'll move into some approaches that are not necessarily more involved, but involve more things in the process, such as sound healing, some more religious or trance-like approaches, and that move towards the purpose of moving through trauma and transformation and energy work. So we're going to start with Buddhist Vipassana. It's been one of the most prominent approaches to meditation worldwide for centuries. Why it's recommended often to start with is because it is non-religious, and the purpose is just to accept things as they are without judgment. So it's very simple in its approach, and it actually means to see things as they are. In this process, it involves observing and accepting with non-judgment, and it is very good for grounding. So this is kind of like to simply sit back and witness things as they arise. One of the benefits of it is it improves the ability to monitor contents of an experience without reactions or judgments. It also improves the ability to concentrate. So this is the type of meditation where we can see, where we have a direct line to our practice of mindfulness in meditation and our practice of mindfulness in ordinary life. So next, let's talk about Sasen. This, of course, is the meditation and practice that is at the heart of Zen Buddhism. In this practice, it's similar in Vipassana in its loose approach, although generally in the practice of Zazen, it's more strict on your body position, breath, and structure. I'm not going to go really in detail here because at the end of this session, I'm going to walk you through the process of a basic Zazen meditation that involves counting and is a really great place to begin your meditation practice. But ultimately, one of the aspects of Zazen that is a little different is, of course, here, like in any meditation, you focus greatly on your breath and your belly. But in this case, your eyes are generally open and focused down on a 45-degree angle. And then, of course, body position is also important in traditional Zazen practices. And this comes from the belief that how you position your body has a lot to do with what happens in the mind. A really fun and positive and interactive basic meditation to also try is the Tibetan loving-kindness meditation. And one of the reasons that it's fun and popular is it is also focused attention. And the process moves from beginning in your position and with the breath. And as you move deeply into your state, you work through a process of basically sending out loving-kindness and observing how that experience affects you. So it begins with sending love and kindness to yourself. And then you move on to sending love and kindness to someone you consider neutral in your life. You maybe don't mind them. You're not necessarily very close to them. Just kind of like a neutral person in your life. And then you move on to sending love and kindness to someone that you have a difficult relationship with. And then you complete it with sending love and kindness out into the universe. And of course, there's variations on how much time you spend on each process, and you can go in cycles and start all over again using the same focal points or different ones. This is a really beautiful meditation to affect the collective conscious or the bigger picture, the meta, because it offers a natural opening of the heart. It's also a great meditation to expose you to moving energy around and sensing for certain vibrations. Okay, great. And then lastly, we'll talk about gazing meditation. Also similar to these others in which the basic form is pretty open. And in this process, you move back and forth between periods of opening and gazing at an object and then closing your eyes. Gazing meditations are also really fun and have a lot of really great benefits. In gazing meditation, you're activating the pineal gland or the third eye. This, like many other forms of meditation, help you to increase concentration and empathy. And it falls along with the idea from Zen that how you position your body has a lot to do with what happens in the mind. And here, we take a lot of information in with our eyes, and so you're working on translating that information into your mind as well. And actually, the retina is a piece of your brain that has grown into your eye, so it makes sense that the two would be so connected. And our eye movements are said to activate certain parts of the brain. For example, if you look down to the left, you're activating the right side of your brain. And if you look down to the right, you're activating the left side of the brain. So in the process of gazing meditations, you are working with a central gaze to activate the whole of the mind. In the yogic practice of Chittaka, your basic objective is to begin by gazing in a relaxed way on an object with your eyes open. And then move into gazing into the void with your eyes closed. You can also do this practice with a partner, gazing into each other's eyes. And here again, not only are you activating the pineal gland, you're also engaging in a practice that activates reading below the surface level into body language and more energetic exchanges. Okay, moving on. Let's talk about a few practices of meditation that involve more external influences. So I'm going to talk about sound meditation and one really lovely basic walking meditation practice. Now there are many different forms of sound meditation. One of the basic core purposes of sound meditation is to focus just on hearing in the hope that the practice evolves into hearing internally. So sound meditations are focused attention. They tend to be structured and interactive. And a popular type of sound meditation is, of course, the mantra. Mantras generally are sounds without a specific meaning, but carry a specific vibration or energy and are repeated in your practice. Oftentimes, a mantra is given specifically to an individual, and is meant for that individual to use. And that's why mantras are usually associated with a personal sound or phrase. In this, repetition is the key, and it's almost devotional, kind of like reading a rosary. And a fun part about the mantras is, of course, the practice of meditating with a mantra can also be carried into your ordinary day by repeating the mantra at any time during the day. There are also mantras that do have specific meanings, and of course, I'm sure you have heard the sound of Om, which is also a mantra, again, that doesn't necessarily have a specific meaning but carries a certain vibration or energy. So where it is believed that each individual has their own mantra specific to them, Om is often believed to be specific sound for all. So mantras are used as a vehicle of the mind, and often mantras remain in your mind after you stop. So while you can also repeat these during the daytime to support your state of mindfulness, you certainly can also repeat these in your head even while you're doing another task. So lastly, regarding sound meditations, I also want to talk about binaural beats. This is an approach that is relatively new, and there's tons of binaural beat meditations that you can find out there. And the idea is that you listen to these meditations with headphones because they play different beats that cause the brain to try to reconcile these two different beats. And this generates a state of alpha waves, which is in the initial levels of meditation. So this is also something that can support your practice because it involves heavy focus attention, involves the external aspect of sound, and gives you something to focus on to carry you into deeper states of meditation. And then lastly, a fun basic walking meditation to begin with. This is great because as we begin our process of engaging in a daily practice of meditation, many of us are really busy, and from day to day, the practice of meditation can be pushed off to the side. And one of the reasons that I'm presenting these many types of meditation, although there might be certain meditations that are better for you for certain purposes and at certain times, a lot of these can be worked into your day-to-day activities. So maybe you find yourself, you have 10 minutes while you're waiting for your kid to get out of school and you're in your car, or you're taking your dog for a walk, or you're somewhere noisy and it benefits you to use headphones to help you concentrate and bring you into the state of meditation. So a basic walking meditation that I love is about 10 minutes long. And what it involves is beginning with 1 minute of each. As you're walking, of course, begin by centering yourself and focusing on your breath. And then spend 1 minute just focusing on the feeling of your body. And what does that feel like? And then move on to focusing for 1 minute on the feeling of your breath, just experiencing the act of breathing for what it is. Then move to the sensation of air on your body. Again, just experiencing that for what it is. Moving on, spend a minute on what you hear, and then a minute on what you see. And then just follow with the last 5 minutes of general open awareness. So this is a practice that involves many different types of senses, seeing things for what they are, and bringing it back to center. It's a great practice to introduce into our very busy daily lives as an opportunity to check in with yourself and check in with mindfulness. And I love it because it reminds me of those moments you have when all of a sudden you kind of stop and step outside of yourself and you think, wow, look at where I am. Look at what is happening. Look at the manifestation of this life. So this is a practice that can help lead you back to that sort of greater observer experience. Now I would like to move into a few other practices that are a little more deeply rooted in religious beliefs. And in these practices, we move beyond alpha waves into a deep state of theta waves, which can be sometimes akin to what we refer to as trance states. So these are states that you see in acts like drumming, dancing, shakers. In Sufism, you see this in dancing in the whirling dervishes. It's a movement meditation, basically involves twirling to access this trance state. And there's much more involved here, but I'm reducing it for the sake of brevity. So theta waves are the brain waves that function when we're in deep states of relaxation, meditation, and mental imagery. We experience these theta waves also during the dream experience. This state of mind is thought to operate outside of the rational brain, and in that way it can receive imagery instead of just creating it from the logic brain. This process acts as a bridge from our sub or unconscious activity to our consciousness, or in religious perspectives, from non-ordinary reality and higher being to the individual. When the brain processes information, it connects various experiences and emotional residues, puts them into perspective, and lays them to rest. With theta waves, we monitor our inner experience and induce physical relaxation to step away from just problem solving all the time. And essentially, we do these practices to access information and experiences outside the normal realm of consciousness. Oftentimes, these practices are also acted out in order to connect the energy world with the physical world and find a union in what the brain has created as to be separate. So Qigong is another process that you might find interesting. And essentially, it's life energy cultivation. And the idea is to focus on energy, on what we call qi, which is located below the abdomen, and circulate that through your body. Okay, so in Qigong, you're combining meditative practices into the physical form and with body practices. Similar to yoga, of course, many Westerners are familiar with yoga and know the physical postures that accompany this practice. But like all of these other types of meditation, they are part of a larger holistic perspective and approach to life. And in yoga, generally speaking, there are four practices. There is the rule of conduct, the physical postures, which many of us are familiar with, breathing exercises, and contemplative practices. So here is a great example of Western culture taking bits and pieces of another religious practice and using what seems beneficial to them. And there's certainly a lot of criticism here about removing just parts rather than taking the information as a whole. But what I love about this practice is it's opened a door for deepening the practice. And where a lot of people can relate to yoga in the physical postures of yoga as a daily practice, because it involves basically exercise, inherently in this practice, you learn breathing exercises, and of course, that often opens the door to more contemplative practices. Okay, so all of these are great examples of types of meditation that involve altered states and interaction with energy work, and of course, visualization and imagery. And in these practices, again, when you move your mind to a state of processing with theta waves, you're actually able to receive imagery rather than create it, in the same way that when you dream, imagery from your subconscious bubbles up to the conscious level. And you're only able to activate this while in these states of consciousness, but that these experiences certainly can increase with time and ordinary awareness with a daily practice of mindfulness. Now I want to go over a couple of types of meditations that again are deeply ingrained in a much greater practice, but I'm just extracting the meditation practice to give you an idea of where you can go with this journey. And these specific types of meditation are really aimed at transformation. Now, all types of meditation ultimately are also aimed at transformation, but these deal again with specific visualizations that help you cultivate the circulation of energy and movement in your life. So the self-inquiry meditation, the I am meditation, in the Buddhist culture, the Buddha was said to ascend to reach enlightenment by the process of asking himself, who am I? And as that answer came up, to evaluate that answer, acknowledge it, and move beyond it. So in this practice, you reject your verbal answers that come in order to avoid attachment to the ego. When a feeling arises, who feels that? Is it me? Who am I? And you kind of get the idea from there. It's not an intellectual tool, but gets to the core of perception and experience. It's a way to focus on the non-verbal I am that shines inside of you. Am I a mother? I'm more than that. Who am I? I am a doctor. I'm more than that. Who am I? I am experiencing emotions. I am more than that. Who am I? Etc. This is a cool meditation, and I'll walk you through a practice of this on the exploration of the psyche in our next journey. Another practice is Taoist meditation, which has a heavy emphasis on living with nature. In Taoist meditation and emptiness meditation, the idea is to let all thoughts rise and fall to empty the self in order to replenish the spirit. And again, this goes back to the idea that one must first empty themselves in order to receive new perspectives and information. In Taoist meditation, there is a big emphasis also on visualization. And in this process, you visualize different aspects of the cosmos in relation to yourself. In Taoist meditation, you'll also encounter practices of inner vision, which brings you to visualize your relationship within your very own organs or inner deities. So again, this is a really great technique to use to cultivate energy practices and a deeper exploration of self. And then the last type of meditation I want to highlight in this section is Tonglen meditation. And Tonglen meditation is meant to connect you to your suffering in an effort to overcome it. In this practice, you work on giving and receiving and letting go of negativity by using the breath, visualization, and intention. Now, the last several types of meditation I've cited are really interesting and insightful practices that can help you deepen your practice, both of mindfulness and self-inquiry, and also can be used as a tool to move you through past trauma and act as a healing mechanism. But again, I just want to point out, sometimes while we move through painful experiences and old trauma, we might be seeking more support than meditation can initially offer us, or at least guidance in our practice of meditation. So again, if you find yourself encountering these types of experiences, it's entirely normal and even recommended that you reach out for support, coaching, and guidance in this area. And certainly there's lots of different resources out there, and I also, of course, offer meditation programs and guidance. Mainly what I want to emphasize here is, although meditation is an extremely helpful tool to cultivate, if you're running into experiences that you are feeling discomfort in, just understand that there is guidance and that you don't have to be stuck in this place, nor do you need to give up your practice, because what we're doing here is trying to bring subconscious beliefs to the surface so that we can work through them. And it's not always the most pleasant experience, although a lot of times you come out better on the other side. And I say this not really as a warning, but just so you can have an awareness on your journey with this practice. Just remember that meditation is a state of restful awareness, and that there certainly is a huge spectrum in the approaches and purposes of meditation. I also want to point out that there certainly is a difference between fixing and healing, and I have to say from my own experience that it's very easy when you begin this journey, begin to notice shadows and blind spots in yourself, or places of habitual reaction, that this isn't necessarily something that you need to fix. It is more about awareness, and moving through places of stuckness in your life can be a healing experience, but it doesn't mean that there's anything wrong. And I just want to emphasize that, because I've found myself in that position a handful of times where you kind of go down this path and become acutely aware of something, and your intellectual brain and your ego brain takes over and thinks that it's something wrong with yourself that you need to fix. And one of the best ways to move through this experience is to go back to some really simple, basic, open monitoring meditations to help strengthen those neural pathways that you've created, right? And I also want to emphasize that in your practice of daily meditation, I highly recommend that you begin with one of the first three types of meditations that I've talked about today. And these will help you get into the rhythm of accessing deeper states of meditation and get better at being the observer, increasing awareness, and increasing mindfulness. And as you go through these processes, you might find after a while that you're ready for more. And that's when you can start incorporating specific intentions into your practice. But I highly recommend that as you begin to incorporate more intricate structures into your practice, don't forget to go back to the basics, just an informal open monitoring experience. Because although structure can be good, and as humans we tend to like structure, just being without seeking a specific result is very important, both in meditation practice and in your life. Okay, so there is a lot of information to take in here, but you can have fun and play with this. Feel out which path is most appropriate for where you are in your life and what you're trying to approach. I want to bring it back by addressing the six principles of meditation by Om Swami. First principle is the principle of recollection. Don't pursue thoughts of the past. The second, calculation. Do not pursue thoughts of the present. Third, imagination. Don't imagine what may happen in the future. Four, construction. Don't try to create an experience. And five, digression. Don't wander, stay in the moment. Now again, naturally, all of these things are going to come up. You'll think about the past. You'll calculate the present. You'll imagine the future. But the point is to not pursue them, to let them arise and fall naturally. Okay, and with that, why don't you take a moment, take a break, stretch a little bit, and I will walk you through a basic counting Sazen technique. In this technique, we're going to practice counting. And the way it looks is on the in-breath, count to one, out on two, in on three, and continue to 10. And if you find yourself getting distracted, just start over. And I do recommend just working towards 10 for your beginning practice. And this practice is perfect for beginners. It helps you cultivate relaxing into a state of meditation. And it gives you a loose but specific focus that also follows the breath. And you're going to be breathing anyway, so what better thing to focus on in the beginning? Okay, so take a moment to get into a comfortable position. You can sit cross-legged in full lotus position, which is kind of like cross-legged, but your feet are resting on the inside of your thighs. You can also do the half lotus position, in which only one foot is resting on your thighs and the other is crossed underneath. And you can also kneel with a pillow behind your legs, or sit comfortably in a chair with your back straight and your feet on the ground. And honestly, of all of the positions, I find that to be one of my favorites because it feels natural. It is fairly comfortable. I stay alert and engaged, and it also helps me feel quite grounded. Personally, I have a tendency to sort of be out of my body a lot, so engaging in practices that encourage grounding is a helpful tool for me. So when you get yourself into a comfortable position, begin with your back straight and your shoulders relaxed. Keep your head erect and your chin slightly tucked in. Let's breathe in and out for a few times together. And as you breathe in and out through your mouth, rock back and forth just to settle into your body. Now bring your non-dominant hand to rest on your dominant hand, with palms up and the tips of the thumbs just touching to form a Sazen mudra. Relax, but remain attentive. Okay. And just begin to start noticing your breath. And as you notice your breath, relax your eyes. For a moment, go ahead and close your eyes. And when you've settled into your position, close your imaginary second eyelids behind your first, setting back deeper into yourself. And breathing through your nose, go ahead and do that one more time and close one more layer of your eyelids. And as you settle in, now open your eyes just slightly, gazing down at about a 45 degree angle. Keep your eyes relaxed and soft. Breathe naturally through your nose and begin to focus on your breath in your belly. And let's take a few breaths together. And when you are ready, begin to attach counts to your breaths. Breathing in for one. it to. In for three. Out for four. In for five. Out for six. Breathe in for seven. Out for eight. Breathe in for nine. And out for 10. Just take a moment and check in with yourself. Check in with your body posture. And allow yourself to continue in this practice. Again, when you begin, if thoughts come up, let the thoughts come and go and start over as needed. Drop the idea of anything outside of the breath and your counts. Drop the idea of the mind, body, space, and time, and just focus on counting your breaths. Beautiful.